We're on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, and we're up to the sugya of Ba'aleha V'Nis'arso, which is the last sugya that we learned yesterday. So after the ones, she entered into a marriage relationship, which begins with Erusin and ends with Nisuin. Rav asked Abaye, what happens to the zchus ha'av, to the father's rights to collect knas, if after the ones, before the hamor bedin, she was nisarsa, she entered into this first stage of marriage? And Abaye answered that nowhere does it say in the pasuk that the Torah excludes the father if she's an arusa. If the Torah wanted to exclude the father and undermine his rights to collect the knas because she was an arusa, then the Torah should have said v'nasan lavi hanara asher lo arusa. It should have described the nara as an asher lo arusa, adding this condition that she has to be asher lo arusa. The Torah never added that condition. Had the Torah added that condition, it would imply that there's no tashlume knas to the father unless she's an ena arusa at the time of v'nasan, at the time of hamad v'din. But instead the Torah says v'nasan lo isha shochevi malavi anara chamishim kesef, which implies that the father always collects the knas of a nara regardless of whether she's an arusa or not an arusa. And that was Abaye's answer to Rava. Rava was not totally on board because he quoted a Braisa, and the Braisa says that if after the ones she got married, then the father is out of the picture and only she could collect knas. And the question is why? So Abaye says, don't quote this Braisa to me, because this Braisa is talking about a case of a woman who, after the ones, was in a suah. She entered into a full-fledged marriage relationship that goes beyond the erusin and includes nisuin as well. So let's just review the last piece of Gemara that we did yesterday. And if we're on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, you'll see the Mishnah, and we're going to go above the Mishnah about 5-6 lines. It says Hachi Hashta, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up above the Mishnah. Hachi Hashta. Hachi Hashta is a phrase in Shas which means don't compare the two cases. Hasam, there in the Braisa that you're quoting, it's a Nesua. I have a logical reason why we exclude the father from Knas in the case of a Nesua, a logical deduction. It's almost like a Bamei Matzinu kind of limud, meaning a mirror image. Ho'il bagrus motziah mirshus ha'av. We know, and that's going to be a sugya coming up, that if she, after the ones, became a bogeres, and that took place before the hamad bedin, in such case the father can no longer collect the knas. She collects the knas herself. Why? Because it says v'nasa lavi hanara. You only pay to the father of hanara. Now she's bogeres. Once she's bogeres, is yotza v'shus ha'av. As far as the knas is concerned, and in fact, as far as all the dinim are concerned, the father's rishus over his bas terminates. For example, he can no longer collect her check, her employment check, her salary check. That's called Maisi Adayin. And he can no longer marry her off and collect the Kesef Kiddushin. All those apply only to Katnus and to Narus exclusively, but not to Bagus. So too in the case of Knas, the father is completely excluded from the ability to collect her Knas once she became a Bogeris. Only she can collect her Knas. Okay, so that's what we know about Bagus. Now Nisuin, let's go on to the case of Nisuin. Well, Nisuin motzi in Rishus Av. The case of Nisuin is the same. Once she gets married, a full-fledged marriage to another man, which includes not just Erusin but also Nisuin, the father is, his rishus over terminates. For example, if she works and she gets a salary check, that check does not go to her father, but rather she pockets it. Or maybe she gives it to her husband in, within the context of a ksuba relationship. But anyway, once she's a nesua, the father's rishus over her terminates. And the same is going to apply to hafaras nedarim, whereas the father had rights to be mefer her nedarim as long as she was a ketana denara. However, if she got married with a full-fledged marriage that includes not just erusin but nisuin, then the father is no longer in the driver's seat as far as hafaras nedarim is concerned. Because once again, the rishus of the father terminates with nisuin. So we have two entities which remove. Wait, you can take it.
I just got.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
The two entities or episodes that will remove the father's rishus over his daughter, who's a nara to ketana. One is bogeres, bagrus, and the other is nisuin. Now, if that be the case, then let's see how this will apply to knas ma bagrus. Just like in the case of bagrus, ba aleha, if the onus happened when she was a nara. But then, before the Hamad Bedin, Bagra, she became a Bogeres, then she is the one who collects her Knas. Li Atzma. Why? Because the Torah says that the father collects the Knas of a Nara. Vinasan Lavia Nara.
Excuse me, where exactly are you?
Right before the Mishnah. It's about two lines before the Mishnah, I would say.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Well, maybe three lines before the Mishnah, you'll see the word Li Atzma.
Okay. Yeah. Got
is af nisuin ba alev in niseis liatzma. If let's say the onus took place when she was a nara, the hamada bedin took place and she's still a nara. But in between the onus and the hamada bedin, she married somebody else with again a full fledged marriage that culminates with nisuin. Is liatzma, she'll collect her own knas. Why? Because the father's zechus over the knas terminates, just like all his zechuyot terminate. Because once she has nisuin, as we said before, he no longer connects her employment check. He no longer could be made for her nedarim. She's on her own. And if that be the case, then as far as onus, as far as knas is concerned, she's on her own. Hello. But you'll ask me about Eris, and that was the original question that Abai addressed to Rava. Is me called Mafki Rishusa Diablo Gamre? Has she left the Rishusa of the father completely simply because she had Eris in the first stage of marriage? She had a Kinyan Ishus? Hotnan. We have a mission at the end of Mesechta Nidorim. Nara Hamarosa Via Ubaila Mefir Nidla Nidorel. The father still has rights to be Mefir Nidorim. As long as she was an arusa, but not nesua, so we see that erusin is not enough to remove the rishus of the father. So, for example, let's say she was married to a non-kohen, even though her father was a kohen. Would she be able to eat truma? So the answer is, well, if it's only erusin, then she hasn't left the rishus of the father. She could continue to eat truma. Therefore, as far as Knas is concerned, the father is still in the driver's seat. If she's still in the Rishus of the father, why? Because number one, she's a Nara. Number two, she only had Erisin and she didn't have Nisuin. Then her father will, all the rights of the father will accrue to the father, will continue to accrue to the father. He remains in possession of all those rights. He can still be made for Hanidarim. He could still collect her employment check. He can still marry her off if she gets divorced and pocket the Kesef Kiddushin, and likewise he still is the Avia Nara as far as Vinosan in the parish of Knas of Onis. So basically the bottom line of this whole sugya is that there's a fundamental difference between Erisin and Nisuin as far as the Rishus Av is concerned. Erisin does not remove the Rishus of the father, whereas Nisuin removes the Rishus of the father. And the Nafka Mina for our purposes is Knas. That as long as she's still a nesua, as long as she's still a nara, even though she became an arusa, the father could collect her knas. Once she becomes a nesua, then, like in the case of Bogeres, the father is completely out of the out of the picture. He's no longer in the driver's seat. He cannot collect knas. He has no other rights whatsoever vis-a-vis his daughter, other than kibbutz, because she's already a nesua. Once she's a nesua, she has the same status as a bogeris. The question here is, why did the Gemara, this is the last thing we discussed yesterday, why did the Gemara have to stretch his arm out to a Mishnah in the Nedarim about Hafaras Nedarim in order to demonstrate that the father loses his rights and she goes out of his Mishnah only with Nisuin but not with Erusin? Why did the Gemara simply quote the Mishnayos in Dinim Amanus, in monetary law, to the effect that the father still collects all and still maintains all his monetary rights, although despite that she's an arusa because she's not yet a nesua?
Well, does he get 100%? Because in nedarim it's split.
Right. In the case of monetary law, there's no right to the arus. The arus only has rights to Hafaras Nedarim. Why? Because we already anticipate they're going to be culminating the marriage and he's going to be carrying the baggage of her,
right,
of her Nedarim. That's called Nedarim Shebein Ol Veino, Nedarim that will have an impact on the marriage. Mm-hmm. But as far as monetary law, she's still in the Rishus of the father because okay, she's only in Arusa. But the question is, why did Gemara feel compelled to stretch its arm out to the law of Nedarim? So the Ritva says the following. Lo mi boy. It goes without saying that l'chol davar shebimamon adai b'rishus avia hi omedes. That the Gemara knew. But the Gemara wanted to go a step further and ask the question, well, is she still b'rishus avia as far as nedarim are concerned? Because nedarim already touch on not mamonos but isa v'heta. That's already jacking it up. Knas is not your classic dine mamonos. Knas is connected with the avera and the punishment for that avera. And therefore we might think that in terms of Isa Veheter, the father is out of the picture already with Erusin, and hence he would not collect Knas. And the answer is, we're going to quote the Mishnah in the Nedarim, that he still has the power of Hafaras Nedarim that he had before, and he could be Mefer HaNedarim. Now we're starting a new Mishnah. And the Masifta here has a very fine introduction, which I wanted to share with you, to this Mishnah, put this Mishnah into a perspective. We've been talking about Knas. In the case of a Nara, there was an Ones, there was a Pitui, and there was a Knas. The Mishnah wants to know, are there other additional payments that the Ones or the Mefata has to pay above and beyond the Knas? And that comes under what's called Chovel Bechavero. We've discussed this concept in the past, that if a person physically assaults another individual, he has to pay five categories of damages: Nezek, Tsar, Ripui, Sheves, and Boshes. Do these categories, and does this parasha of Chovel apply in the cases of Ones and Mefata? And the answer is, says the Mishnah, yes, but a very qualified yes, not an absolute yes. The five categories themselves as a unit, all inclusive, do not apply to Ones and Mefata. But different parts of those five we can check off. In other words, Chovel B'Chavero applies even in the case of Ones and Mefata. That's also considered Chovel B'Chavero. And the Gemara later on, Adaf Mem Amid Beis, is going to quote Abaye as saying that we derive the parasha of Chovel in the case of Ones and Mefata from a separate ribui. And that is, it says, Tachas Asher Ina. In the parish of Knas, the Torah says that the reason why the Ma'anis or the Mefat has to pay Knas is Tachas Asher Ino. That's called Inui. So the 50 shkolim of Knas is for the Inui. What we're talking about, says Abai, is beyond Inui. In addition to Inui, there are other dimensions of suffering that she, or losses that she incurs as a result of this onus, as this, let's call it, chaval. So in other words, the Torah specifically earmarks the 50 shkolim for tachas asher ino, to tell you that there may be other suffering and other losses that she suffers, and beyond that we have other payments. The tachas asher ino tells you that this payment called knas is for the tachas asher ino, but implying that there are other additional compensation payments that he has to make for other chavola, for other elements of chavola.
Wait a minute, our Mishnah mentions tzar. Is that the same as ina?
Tachas asher ina is a reference to the act itself. You know, the act itself is called inui. That's what the Torah uses that term inui for the act itself.
That's in addition to whatever tzar she might.
Right,
feel.
The tzar is beyond the inui, correct? So the fact that the Torah says, you know what, this money that he's paying chavishim shkolim as a that's earmarked for tachas asher ina, only for the ma'aseh bia itself. But implying, says Abai, that there are other payments that have to be made because of other dimensions, which we call chavala dimensions, and we're going to take them apart into their component parts in just a minute. So the language of Abaye later on is going to be michlal, from the fact that the Torah says tachas asher ina, the implication is shel muvadzos, in addition to tachas asher ina, yesh tashlum and acherim, there are other chiyuvim that she has to pay, hamikubalim, which are always payable in all chovel b'chaver. That's Abai. Rava says that we derive it from the pasuk v'nosana ish hashochev ima lavi anara chamishim kasef, which means hanas shkiva chamishim mechlal sheyesh gam chiyuv boshes upagam. From the fact that the Torah went out of its way to say v'nosana la ish hashochev ima, the extra words hashochev ima, tell you that he's going to pay chamishim kesef because of shochev ima, implying that there are other additional payments that have to be paid because of above and beyond hanas shchiva. Okay, now I'm getting back to the introduction here of the Masifta. He says the following: there are three other categories out of the five of tashlume chavola which apply here. In the case of onus, we'll see about mefata in just a moment. And those three categories are called nezek, tsar, and boshes. The Gemara is going to analyze what and how these categories apply, and how do we evaluate how much they're worth. In the case of onus, how do you evaluate nezek? How do you evaluate tsar? How do you evaluate boshes?
Nezek is pagam here?
I don't know. We'll have to see. It bothers me to no end that it says pagam and it says nezek. I don't know why. They seem to be they're synonymous terms, but yet there's got to be some reason why. You know, maybe the nezek of onus is called pagam, but it's as opposed to general nezek. I don't know. That's something that really bothers me throughout this sugya. Okay, next. There are two other categories of chavola which do not apply in the case of onus, and certainly not in the case of mafata, as we'll soon see, because not even the three categories will apply in mafata. But we're talking about onus now. So we have nezek, tsar, and boshes, and if you know the whole list, we left out ripui and shevis. The assumption is that although she suffers a certain amount of pain and humiliation, and of course her value on the market, so to speak, was devaluated, but she doesn't suffer to the extent in which she cannot function. She's not in a hospital. She can go to work, and she's not losing any employment checks. She hasn't called in sick, so to speak. Now, again, in theory, you might have cases, they're not the regular classic run-of-the-mill cases, where the you know, the pain was so great that, or maybe in our time when you talk about psychological pain or whatever, that she would be able to sue him even for ripui and boshes. You know, let's say she had psychologist bills or something like that. You know, billable hours, they pay you, you know, you have to pay $500 per hour, you know, to sit in the chair. Or let's say Shevis, you know, let's say she was so impacted by this action, she couldn't go to work. But we're going to go now with the general run of the mill. That's what he says here, that there's no ripui in Shevis. Okay, so again, the tashlum here for Nezek is called Pgam in this context. So let's not get confused. I'm not sure, again, why the shift in the language. I can't tell you, but what Nezek is in general Chavola is called Pgam in Ones and Mefat. And that's called Nezek. And the Mishnah later on, Adaf Mem, is going to use the word Pgam, and it's going to try to evaluate her Pgam. Let's say she was being sold on the market as a Shivcha. How much would she have been worth before the rape situation? How much is she devaluated as a result of the rape? And that's called Pgam, or in general, Nezek. Okay. Now, another thing we have to know as an introduction to our Mishnah is that our Mishnah is going to address the following question. What are the differences, if any, between Ones and Mefate as far as the payments are concerned? So let's read the Mishnah. HaMefate Nosein Shlosha Dvarim Vehaones Arba. So again, we're talking about an Arab Asula. We're talking before Erisin. And we're talking about Ones Umefata. In the case of Mefata, above and beyond the payment of Knas, there'll be two other payments, a total of three payments. In the case of an ones, there'll be four payments, there'll be knas, plus another three payments, which we said before were nezek, tsar, and boshes. So ones, arba, right? So if we add knas to nezek, tsar, and boshes, we have a total of four. Mefata is only going to be three, right? And why is Mefata only three? And the answer is that we remove Tsar from the list. And what we're left with is Nezek, otherwise known as Pagam, and Boshes, plus, of course, Knas. So we have a total of 2 plus 1, meaning 2 for Chavola, and that's Nezek and Boshes. And then we have the Knas itself. And that's called Shlosha Dvarim. That's in the case of Mefata. In the case of the Ones, there's also Tsar. And the Gemara can try to understand why is it that in the case of Ones there's Tsar, but not in the case of Mefata. Now, in addition to all of this, we have HaMefata Nosein Boshes, and we have Pagam, right? Pagam was Nezek, Uknas, plus the Knas. So we have all told three. What we left out was Tsar. And most of love Ones Shenosein Es Hatzar. So in the case of Ones, in addition to Pagam, otherwise known as Nezek, and Boshes, there's a payment of Tsar. So Nezek and Boshes, which means Pagam and Boshes are common, and of course Knas, are common to both Ones and Mefata. The only difference is that whereas in Mefata you have Ones, in Mefata you have Nezek and Boshes, without Tsar, and in Ones we have Nezek, Boshes, and Tsar. Ma bein Ones u'mefata, and therefore the Mishnah now gives us sort of a summary of what we've said until now. The bottom line is, after we've calculated that in the case of Mefata you pay 2 plus 1 is 3, in the case of Ones you pay 3 plus 1 is 4, ma bein ones u'mefata, ones no sin es atzar, u'mefata ein no sin es atzar. In other words, if you can ask me the question, what is it that jacked up the, in the case of onus, that jacked it up from 3 to 4, what was the extra payment? The answer is tzar. Now there's a footnote here, in the name of the sheet of Kubetzes, he wants to know, why did the Mishnah bother summarizing it? Isn't it obvious and implicit in the ratio? Right? The ratio says, Mefaten osin shlosh dvar va'onis arba. And the Mishnah goes on and says, Mosef loves onis. What's the extra four? And that is tzar. So why do you have to say, Mabein onis mefaten this and that tzar? You're really basically repeating yourself. So he quotes an answer here that the Tana wants to be mechadish that la'olam ena mefatet no sein tzar af biofen shenitz tara b'viyoso kevin shetzara eno gadol kol kach. So he says the following: if you only have the ratio of the Mishnah, which states that an onus adds tzar, you might say the following, that what that implies is that mefatet may or may not have tzar, meaning ones is a definite tzar. Mafata is questionable. There may be tzar or there may not be tzar. So the Mishnah says, no, this is an absolute difference under all circumstances. A mafata doesn't pay tzar. And the reason for that is because whatever tzar she might possibly suffer in the case of mafata, it's negligible. And that's how the halacha defines it in objective terms.
I can't even understand the Hava Mina. She went along willingly. So I'm not even sure what's our guilty conscience.
Well, let me ask you another question. We did say that in the case of Mefata, in addition to Knas, he pays Boshes and Pagam. So
at least to her father. I don't remember if we said if she's in the position of collecting the Knas that she gets his payments too.
Well, let's assume that the Mishnah itself is making this absolute distinction. Again, we'll see the sugya, but between onus and mefata, the rules that we're setting up here about mefata will apply whether or not it's the father who's collecting the knas, whether it's she who's collecting the knas. Either way, I understand what you're saying, Chaim, that maybe she can't be mochel on behalf of her father if her father has rights. But if you
I can't believe we discussed this in the past. I just can't remember what the maskana was.
Right. So what I'm suggesting, just to set up a logical sequence here, let's assume right now, very simplistically, that the Mishnah is making an absolute categorization. The difference between mafata and onus under all situations is that whereas mafata, he pays nezek or what we'll call pagam, and boshes, he doesn't pay tzar. And the summary at the end, the ma hefresh at the end, would emphasize the fact that under no conditions is there a payment of tzar.
Yeah, I just don't understand why we would need the emphasis. I understood that there's...
Because she may suffer a minimum amount of tzar under certain circumstances, but nevertheless, that's not considered. Again, not because of Mechila. I'm not going with Mechila,
right.
Then we go into this. The question is the father being Tovei the Knas or and so forth and so on. But simply because it's like a Pachas Misha Pruta, if you follow what I mean. Now, just like in Dini Mavidus, I can't force you to pay me if you stole less than a Pruta, so too the Tsar, in the case of a Futa, is so minimum and so negligible, the Torah doesn't consider it and the Torah objectifies that in all cases. That Tsar that she claims she had is so negligible that it's not collective.
Okay. And this is the Shita Mekubetzer?
Well, actually, he quotes it here in the name of... I mentioned the Shita Mekubetzer, but that's actually a different paragraph here. In this particular paragraph, he's quoting the Teferis Yisrael,
okay,
which is published in the back of the Mishnayos. Now, there's another footnote here that I wanted to mention, and that is that the discussion about Boshes is not going to come up in our Mishnah, meaning what exactly is Boshes and how much does he have to pay for Boshes. And this is true both in the case of Onus and Mefata. But that discussion is going to come in the next Mishnah, which is on Daf Mem. And what we're going to find out is that boshes is not objective. It's very subjective, and it has to do with the station or the stature of a person in his life. And basically, you ask that particular person, would it be worth it for him to pay in order to spare himself to avoid that embarrassment? So if he's the Prince Charming, Prince Charles, then he would pay an awful amount of money to avoid boshes. So, but all that we'll get to, Mirtz Hashem, be od moed on daf. Man. Now the Mishnah goes on to discuss another difference between onus and mafat, and that's in terms of the mitzvah of the lo siya le'isha. Because in the parasha of ones, which is in Dvarim Perkov Beis and Parshas Ki Teitzei, it says not only v'nasana isha shochev imo lavi anarocha mishim kesa, but it also says v'lo siya le'isha. And we're going to soon see that involves a lav and an essay, and he's not allowed to divorce her, he has to marry her. And that's the next part of our Mishnah. Ha'ones nosein miyad. In other words, regardless of whether he marries her, because she has to agree to allow him to marry, but he has to marry her whether he wants to or not.
Wait, no 10 years married?
No. Notain is referring to the knas.
Okay, right.
The ones has to pay the knas. The word miyad here should be interpreted a little bit loosely. Miyad, which literally means immediately, means under all circumstances, and therefore it's immediate, meaning there are no conditions attached here. Even though he's going to marry her, he still has to pay the knas. Now again, that's going to be very relevant if the father is in the driver's seat, because he's going to get the knas even though his daughter's going to marry this fellow. In a case where the father's out of the picture, then you have to talk in terms of paying the knas within the framework of marriage. You know, if a husband owes his wife a knas, who owns that money? So the truth is that even within the framework of marriage, a woman has her own bank account. You know, people think that in Jewish law, a woman is, you know, she doesn't have any other, her own assets. So that's not really true, because there's something called Nichsei Malug. Nichsei Malug means those Nechassim where she owns the Nechassim. He has rights just to the payros, you know, so he could rent out the house and pocket the rental fee. But the house, the apartment belongs to her. And therefore, even if the father would be out of the picture, let's say he died or she became a Bulgaris at some point and so forth, nevertheless, the ma'anes, although he's marrying this woman, he still would have to pay her that money, that knas. So velosi alisha is on top of knas. It's not a replacement for knas. But b'mafata is k'lichshayotzi. L'chshayotzi means that if the decision was made, and I'll explain that in just a second, that there won't be any marriage, then he pays the knas. But not immediately. In other words, it's all conditional. We're going to have to sit down and decide whether this relationship is going to culminate with a marriage. If it does, there's no knas. Right? If it doesn't, which is called l'kshiyotzi, then he will pay the knas. Now, the word l'kshiyotzi is a bit strange here, but we'll try to do the best we can. L'kshiyotzi means when he pushes her away. Motziota. Motziota means he takes her out. What does he take her out? He pushes her away from himself. He doesn't want to marry her. Which means the Torah is not going to force him to marry her. Why? Because that's a mafata situation. The Torah, in the case of ma'anes, says he has to marry her, whether he likes it or not. You know, if he doesn't marry her, we're going to beat him up till, you know, beat him into a pulp. But if he's a mafata situation, then he will make that decision whether he wants to marry her. Nobody could force him. And the deal is that if he does go ahead and marry her, maybe this is a motivation to marry her, he does not pay knas.
That's only if he himself refuses to marry?
That's what I was about to get to, Chaim. You're always on the target. What if she refuses to marry him? He wants to marry her, but she refuses to marry him. That's her right. She's given the option to refuse her without losing the knas. And that's what the Mishnah emphasizes here. Mefata l'kshayotzi, meaning he will decide, let's say, even though she's willing to marry him, that he doesn't want to marry her, he's going to pay the knas. If, on the other hand, she decides she doesn't want to marry him, then his decision or interest in marrying her is totally irrelevant. At that point, there's no velosi alisha. Because there's no velosi alisha against her will. That's true in the case of onus, but it's also true in the case of mafata. Now, if there's no marriage, then he has to pay the knas. And so, that's explicit in the pasuk. I just want to quote the pasuk to you because hearing the words of the Torah is very meaningful. The Torah says, "In ma'ein yema'ein avia l'sital lo kesef yishkol kamor avasulos." So the Torah itself makes the chiyuv of knas in the case of a futa conditional on the fact that he did not marry her. Meaning, had he married her, he would not pay the knas. So therefore, the Torah goes and says that if he won't marry her, and the Torah describes a specific scenario which he doesn't marry her, then kesef yishkol kamor psulos, he has to pay the knas. Under what circumstances the Torah addressed this case where he will not marry her? In ma'ein yema'ein avia. If the father says, I don't want anything to do with this fellow.
But the previous pasuk ends with mohor yimharena lo leisha, which I always thought meant he's going to pay the dowry in any case.
Well, that depends upon how much the dowry is. It may be the same as 50 shekel. It may not be. So let's give a scenario where Mari Marenel Isha would mean that he pays less than 50 shekel. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that certainly could be the case. Then the Torah says that's what he's going to pay. Just one second. This is the case where he is marrying her, right? He is marrying her. And then the Torah is going to say if he doesn't marry her, which again, even if it's because, despite his willingness to marry her, then he pays the 50 shekel. So the knas, therefore, is conditional on the fact that he marries her. Now, in order for him to marry her, we need both the consent of the father representing his daughter and his own consent. Mm-hmm. If one of those conditions is lacking, then there will not be a marriage, and therefore, hence, he will pay the knas. So that's not called miyad, that's called in the language of the Mishnah, shiyotzi. When, again, in this case, he decides that he doesn't want to marry her, he has to pay knas, but in truth, even if he didn't make that decision not to go through with the marriage, but it was the father, he'll pay the knas. Later on, the Gemara is going to have a havamina that the word l'chshiyotzi means when he gives her a get. But the Gemara is going to reject that outright because he hasn't even married her. So how could the Mishnah say, well, when he divorces her? Therefore, the Gemara reinterprets the word l'chshiyotzi as kishalo yirtza l'komsa, if he doesn't want to marry her. And finally, the last difference is ha'ones shose batziso, which means that whether he wants to marry her or he doesn't want to marry her, he will be forced to marry her. And the phrase shose batziso means he drinks out of a very disgusting kind of vessel. And that's a mashal. You know, the Mishnah didn't want to spell this out, that she she may be a very, you know, what's the opposite of someone who's a very desirable marriage partner, maybe undesirable, okay, if I can use that term. She's very undesirable. I mean, we don't want to speak lashon hara about a woman, but, you know, and stop saying bad things about her, but let's say she's never blind, or she's lame, or she's missing some limbs, or something, you know what I mean? He has to marry her. She could be the ugliest thing on the earth, pardon the being very harsh about it, very coarse about it, he has to marry. And the truth is, the Mishnah itself is being very coarse, because the Mishnah used the word atzitzo. Atzitzo is usually a kli that's used for, I don't want to say it, you know, for poo, if you know what I mean.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They had special earthenware kelim that where they put their urine or this, and nobody wants to drink out of that kli. I mean, you could clean it from now until doomsday and use rases nagev or whatever your favorite detergent here is, but you wouldn't want to drink out of that.
I was thinking the modern meaning of it.
Yeah, the Gemara. No. That's and the Gemara is using that as a mashal to say that, my friend, you're going to have to marry this woman if you're an ones, even if she's a balas mum, and nobody on the face of the earth would want to marry this ugly witch. You know what I'm saying? And that's called atzitzo. I mean, again, I'm not holding back here, and I'm using very very bad terminology, because the word atzitzo is a very That's as far as an ones is concerned. Then we get to the case of mafata. And again, let's emphasize here at this point that not only does it mean that we force him to marry her, but above and beyond that, he's not allowed to divorce her. That's a separate law. So we have the asay of Velosi Elisha, and in the next part of the pasuk it says, Lo yuchal ashalcha kol yomav. So, you know, a person should think twice before this rape situation, right? That's obvious, but it's even more obvious in a Torah perspective, because he's going to have to marry her with all the obligations that apply to marriage, and she looks like what she does. But for mafata, in conscious, in the case of mafata, in rotzalotzi or motzi. Now, what does that mean in rotzalotzi motzi? Which means he's allowed to divorce her. That means if he went ahead and he decided to marry her, he doesn't even have to decide to marry her. You know, the mission wanted to go even a step further. Even if he went ahead and married her, you might think it's really insulting to her that she's going to now be divorced. He's allowed to divorce her. Rotzel hotzi motzi. But in truth, he doesn't even have to marry her. So no, we're not going to force that, his hand on that. Forced marriage. And the Gemara is going to derive this later on from a pasuk. It says, "Mahar yimarenu lo liisha," and yimarenu lo is midaito, meaning mirtzono, that he decided he wants to marry her. So there are two differences really between onus and mafata as far as marriage. One difference is whether it's optional or it's obligatory, or we can beat the living daylights out of him if he doesn't want to marry her. And the second difference is, let's say he married her, can he divorce her, can he not? And in the case of onus, we're not going to allow him to divorce her. In the case of mafata, he didn't have to marry her to begin with, and if he married her, he could divorce her. Ketzad, what is this case of an onus which it says, shoseb asiso? Afilu hi chigeres. Chigeres means a hinkadinker in Yiddish, someone who's lame. Afilu hi suma, she's blind. Afilu hi mukashchin, she has a very serious dermatological, pathological phenomenon. And nevertheless, he has to marry her. Nobody would want to marry this woman the way she looks. She looks like sin. I mean, Nebuch, she's covered head to toe with blemishes. And yet he has to marry her. And not only does he have to marry her, he's not allowed a divorce. Now the last part of this Mishnah is a hemshech of the case of onus. It's not a contrast between onus and mafata. And then what happens if the marriage was consummated because he had no choice in the matter, and nimtzabar of his daughter, and then he finds out that she had an illicit relationship with some other man. Osha ain't a ruya lovely Israel. Or there's some sort of an Iser which the Torah says you're not allowed to be married to this woman. And we'll give examples as we go along. Right? Is therefore the Mishnah says, you might think lo siya leisha, we should apply the principle of esei docha lo sase, right? That the esei of a lo siya leisha should apply here, even though he's under normal conditions, he's not allowed to marry her. Ein rashoy lekayim, he's not allowed to marry her. Or if he married her, he has to divorce her. Even though there's a pasuk v'lo siyal isha. Why? Shenemar v'lo siyal isha, isha ra'uya lo. And we've had this before, that when the Torah says he has to marry her, it's referring to an isha ra'uya lo. All right, let's go straight to the Gemara. Tsar demai. What kind of tsar, in the case of ones, does she suffer? And the Gemara has two opinions. De of my, of what sort? Of what sort?
Okay, thank you.
Omar Avud Shmuel, we're going to have two opinions on this. First, Avud Shmuel, Tsar Shechovta or Chavata, there's a mapikeya, a whole, you know, there's a dot in the hay, Al Gabi Karka. No, when he raped her, he threw her down onto the ground. And in the case of Mefuta, since she doesn't stop him, right, she's a consulting adult, you know, and, I don't know if she's an adult, she's a Nara, but anyway, he doesn't have to beat her up, you know, throw her down onto the floor. Maskifle Rabbi Zera, Elameato Chavata Al Gabi Shirayim, Hochinami de Potur. As the Mishnah says that in all cases, the ones pays for four categories, one of which is Tsar. And it sounds like under all circumstances there's tsar. Well, what tsar is there that's built in to the fact that he threw her down on karka? What happens if he threw her down on a nice, soft, you know, silk garments and she suffered no tsar through the chavata by being thrown down? Is it going to be potur? I mean, the Mishnah doesn't seem to indicate that. The Mishnah seems to indicate that whatever this tsar is, it's always there. It's a given. It's something more inherent in the bia itself. You follow what I mean? It's not external to the bia because he threw it down on a heavy surface. V'chi tema chinami, but maybe you'll say no chinami. The Mishnah is talking about a normal case, not an abnormal case. A man doesn't rape a woman over these beautiful mattresses, you know, made out of silk. So that's not true. We're going to prove now from a brisa that the Mishnah is talking about a tsar which is built into the bia itself. It's not conditional on something external to the bia, like chavot al gavi karka. What does it say? It says in the brisa, this brisa is an embellishment of what it says in the Mishnah, that an ones pays tsar. And this brisa is going to quote a machlokes on the din of tashlum tsar. In the case of ones, is there a tashlum? Is there an obligation for him to pay for tsar? Our Mishnah establishes that you have to pay for tsar, but this price, because it's tanoim, at least mentions one tana that disagrees with our Mishnah and rejects our Mishnah, and that's Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, ones eino mishalim esatzar. According to his opinion, the ones does not pay tsar, as opposed to our Mishnah. And why is that? So Mishnah so far lehitz tayar tachas bayla, the tsar that she's going to suffer as a result of the ones is inevitable, meaning that when she gets married, she's going to suffer that tsar in any event. It must be something that's inherent in the bia per se, and. And here we turn to Daf Lamed Tes Amid Beis. Sofal it's Tartach as Baila means we don't force a person to pay something for X that's inevitable. If X is the suffering that's going to happen in any event, then just because it happened a little bit earlier in time, that's not enough to force a person to obligate a person to pay for that. You don't have to compensate someone for some loss that he's going to suffer in any event. And that's called a nezek shesofo lava balav hachi. That's called a nezek that's going to happen in any event. Amrulo, the Chachamim say, in a domen nivelis bionis l'nivelis b'rotzin. It's true that ultimately, with the first bia, she's going to suffer a certain amount of tsar, but it's not the same qualitatively as the tsar that she suffers when she's raped. So the first bia of a woman always entails a certain element of tsar, but it's jacked up many folds, said the Chachamim, by the fact that it was ones. Now, for the fact that Reb Shimon says, "Mivnei shesofal it's tar tachat."
Wait, excuse me. Yeah. Maybe shesofal it's tar tachat bala. Is that referring to the fact that she's going to end up marrying her ones, or is that referring to breaking the hymen?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, that's what I think. Yeah.
Okay.
In any event, we're not talking about chavot al gavi karka because, you know, Reb Shimon would make no sense if we're talking about chavot al her husband. You know, when they consummate the marriage, you know, in that canopy bed, he's not going to throw it down on the floor. What is he beating her up? You know, that. So what's soful? It's taratachas pilot. Must be something inherent in the bia itself. And again, the chachamim agree that the tzar here is soful. It's taratachas pilot. But they just say that it's that the soful. It's taratachas pilot reaches a certain element of tzar, and it doesn't go beyond that. It's not, you know, let's not increase it to the type of tzar that she, you know, let's not equate it with the type of tzar that she's going to suffer when it's an onus. So we're going to have to come up with another, an alternative understanding of what tzar is. It's not chavot al gabi karak. Hello, Omar of Nachman of Rabbah Baravua, tzar shall pisuk haraglayim. That in order to do this intercourse, he has to separate her legs, and she suffers a certain amount of pain when he separates her legs. And the Gemara proves that from a pasuk in Yecheskel Hanavi, v'cheinu omer v'tifaski es raglayach l'chol over. I mean, he's giving castigation to women who live a loose lifestyle. They're mizanos. And in his metaphor, Yecheskel, the sin that was rampant at that time was avodah zarah. And he says that they worship avodah zarah, bow down to these other gods, like a woman who's a zona, a woman who's a harlot, and she doesn't care about having znus with any man that comes along, as long as he pays the price. And so too, you worship every single deity that you can come up with, you without discerning one deity. You know, that's how Yechezkel makes fun of the idolatry that was rampant in his time. And the extra element here in his castigation is that even though a zona will suffer to some extent, right? But she's willing to do it for the sake of whatever pleasure she gets, or for the sake of the money that she gets, and that's the tzar of pisuk raglayim, and that's indicated in this pasuk. So we understand what Rav Shimon meant when he said soful it's taratach is baila, because whenever she consummates the marriage with a sexual intercourse, then there's going to be pisuk raglayim. So there's going to be that tzar. And therefore, according to the Shita of Shimon, there's no tashlum of tzar in the case of onus. But the Gemara says that according to Chachamim, that tzar is increased many fold in the case of onus, as far as pisuk raglayim is concerned. So the Gemara wants to know, ihachi mefuta nami. The Mishnah establishes that there's no chiyuv tzar in the case of mefuta. Why not? There's going to be a pisuk raglayim in the case of mefuta, so that element of tzar exists as well. Omer of Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua, Moshal de Mefuta Lamad over Domel Adam Shomel Chavei, Krashi Raim Shalivi Potter. In other words, when she consents to this action, she doesn't really suffer that pain. She waives that pain. She's mochal on any element of pain, a piece of ring line. But there is an element of pain. Again, we have to understand in general why there are any tashlumin of mefuta. Why don't we apply this principle that she's mochelus, like boshes or pagam, like that? We have to. So let's stop here. If I can trouble you for a pencil, I'll just make a note of where we got up to. Oops, sorry.
Sorry.
And then we'll turn off the air conditioning, and I'll wish you a great day.
You too.